All right, so have you ever thought about like how solid, like rock solid an agreement actually needs to be, especially when we're talking about, commercial law and those big deals? Specifically I was thinking, what happens when the people involved, they kind of leave some of the, I don't know, the details, the finer points for later, right? Can they still like legitimately have a contract like right now?
That's a great question and a very practical one too.
It feels like pretty fundamental stuff for, well, anybody who's going to be dealing with commercial transactions. And
Absolutely.
I'd say especially for like, all of you future legal eagles out there.
You know it.
Today, we're diving deep, no pun intended, into the world of contract formation
Oh yeah.
under the Uniform Commercial Code, the UCC.
Ah, the UCC. The heart and soul of commercial law.
And the core question that we're going to tackle today is like, at what point does leaving things open, those terms, when does that actually stop a contract from even existing?
Right. It's a fine line, like where's that tipping point where it goes from flexible to straight up like unenforceable?
And to really get a grip on this, we're going to break down a key case.
Love it. Hit me with it.
All right, so Bethlehem Steel Corp v. Litton Industries, Inc.
Big players.
Big
That's a shit.
play. Huge. Bethlehem Steel, obviously, they're the steel giant.
Steel world.
And then on the other side, we've got Litton Industries, and they're a shipbuilding powerhouse.
Shipbuilding, yeah. No small potatoes there.
So what's the fight about? The enforceability of an option contract for building these like massive ore-carrying ships?
Wow. So we're talking like serious industrial scale stuff
Oh
here.
yeah. And here's a number that should get your attention. Bethlehem Steel was after over $95 million in damages.
Whoa, okay.
That's serious money.
95 mil. Yeah, that definitely raises the stakes. You're not messing around at that point.
That's some high stakes litigation right there.
Yeah.
So what makes this case like super fascinating is, I think, the tension it reveals,
Yeah.
like within contract law itself.
Okay, I'm listening.
On one hand, you've got UCC Section 2204, and it's like, hey, we're all about flexibility here.
The UCC tries to be practical, right?
Exactly. Like
Yeah.
it basically says a contract for sale, it can totally exist, even if every single little T isn't crossed and every N dotted right up front. As long as there's like a way for the court to come up with some kind of remedy, it's okay.
The path to a remedy.
Yeah. But then on the other hand, we've got good old common law. It's like that strict parent at the dinner table.
Right, much more traditional, more rigid.
And they're all about like, no, you need very specific, concrete terms for this to actually be a contract that we'll recognize.
Okay, yeah. So, like, two different philosophies at play here.
So the question, right, the $95 million question is, did Bethlehem Steel and Litton, did they go too far?
Did they push it too far?
Wow.
Read.
Yeah. Did all that stuff they left for later, did it still fit under that UCC umbrella of flexibility? Or was it just like too vague to call it a real contract?
That's the crux of it, yeah.
And get this, it's not like a simple yes or no answer, which is like honestly what makes it such a great case to really dig into.
Yeah, the good ones are never simple.
Even the courts, they couldn't agree,
Yeah.
The Pennsylvania Superior Court, they were like, yeah, trial court got it right. But then there's this dissenting opinion.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so there's another side to this story.
It signals that, well, this is tricky. There are good, solid arguments on both sides.
You've got competing legal principles, competing interpretations.
Yeah.
It's what keeps things interesting, right?
So let's get down to brass tacks. What was the final ruling in Bethlehem Steel v. Litton? Did they say, yes, this option agreement is enforceable, or no, it's not?
The court ultimately sided with Litton Industries.
Right.
They said the option agreement, no, not enforceable.
Wow. Okay, so not enforceable.
And the thing that really swayed them was there was no agreement on some pretty key terms.
Oh, like what?
Like, most importantly, the specifics of the price escalation clause.
The price escalation clause.
Yeah, and it makes sense, right? You're talking about these huge, complex ships. Construction takes time. Costs can change a
I
lot.
mean, inflation's a thing, right?
Exactly. Materials, labor, all that can fluctuate.
Yeah.
So how do you adjust the price fairly over time?
Yeah, that's a pretty major detail to just like leave hanging.
Major. And that's exactly what the court thought. They were like, you're talking big money here. You can't just wave your hands and say, we'll figure out the price later.
Right. It's not like picking a font for the contract.
No, no. This is the heart of the deal, the financial nuts and bolts.
And if you don't have that nailed down,
it throws the whole thing into question. And that's what the majority of the court focused on. They said, look, we're not here to invent terms for you that you couldn't agree on yourselves. We're not contract architects. We interpret the contracts that the parties make.
It's like, do your homework first, then come to us.
Yeah, exactly. Figure out the basics before you ask us to weigh in.
Okay, so that makes total sense. But you mentioned earlier there was a dissenting opinion.
Right.
A different perspective from one of the judges. What was their take on this whole thing?
Okay, so the dissenting judge, they had a much different view. They were really leaning on the UCC's whole mission of, like, you know, let's be practical, let's make business happen.
Okay, so like the pro-business side of the UCC.
Yeah, exactly. Their argument was basically, look, they had a basic framework. They knew what they were building.
They knew they were talking about ore vessels.
Specific kinds of ore vessels, even. And crucially, they had a starting price, a base price.
They had a number to start with.
So the dissenting judge was like, come on. The court could have looked at what's standard in the industry, you know?
Yeah.
Use those norms to fill in the gaps, especially with the price escalation.
Interesting. So instead of saying it's a completely void, they would have looked to, like, industry practices to make it work.
Right. Like, how do other shipbuilders and buyers handle price adjustments in these kinds of contracts?
Sort of like filling in the blanks with what's usually done.
Exactly. And the dissenting judge felt that having that initial agreement, you know, the type of ships, the base price, that showed they intended to be bound.
They were serious about making a deal.
Serious enough. They just hadn't hammered out every detail.
And you're saying that the dissenting judge felt that? The UCC allows for that, right?
Right.
Like, the courts can actually step in and use those tools to, like, resolve those little gray areas.
Totally. They were basically saying the UCC is here for exactly these situations where the big picture's clear, but there are some specifics to iron out. We shouldn't let those specifics kill a deal that everyone wanted to make.
So we've got a real philosophical clash here, right?
Big time.
Majority's like, no, you got to be crystal clear, dot your I's, cross your T's on those essential terms.
Black and white.
And then the dissent's like, hey, let's be a little more pragmatic, you know, use the UCC, look at what everyone else is doing and try to make this thing work.
Find a workable solution.
Now, for those of you out there who are on the path to becoming lawyers.
Future legal stars.
What are the big lessons that we can pull out of Bethlehem Steel v. Litton?
So for you folks, this case is a great reminder, right? Precision matters.
Oh, yeah.
Clarity is key.
Absolutely.
When you're drafting these commercial contracts.
Especially when you're dealing with huge sums of money.
Big, complex deals, lots of zeros. Even under the UCC, don't assume that just leaving big gaping holes in your terms.
Like price.
Yeah, price, quantity, deliver, those core things.
Yeah.
Don't assume the court's going to be okay with that. They might say, nope, too vague, no contract here.
It's too much for them to figure out.
Too much invention. The UCC is flexible, but there are limits.
It's about finding that sweet spot between, like, you know, being flexible and making sure the core of the deal is clear.
Right. Right. And look, Bethlehem Steel v. Litton, it's a warning sign, right?
Yeah.
It shows what can happen when you think the UCC is going to swoop in and save you from a poorly drafted contract, especially when it's like those fundamental things, price, quantity, delivery. You can be wishy-washy on those.
So the UCC is your friend, but it's not going to do all the work for you.
Exactly. It's a tool, a powerful tool, but you got to use it the right way.
This case, it really gets you thinking, right? Like, what other kinds of scenarios might we see where those same questions come up about open terms and whether the party is actually, you know, meant to create a real binding agreement?
That's a good question. And it happens more often than you might think.
Where else might we see this?
Think about those long-term supply agreements, right?
Okay.
Where maybe the price is tied to, like, the market price of some commodity.
Oh, yeah, something that fluctuates a lot.
Exactly. Or what about those contracts for developing new technology where, like, the final specs, they might change a lot as the project moves along?
You don't know what you're going to discover.
Right. You're innovating. Things evolve.
So you need flexibility.
Exactly. Mm. In those situations, people need to be able to adapt, right? But they also need a solid legal foundation from day one.
Yeah, you can't just wing it on a handshake.
Nope. The real trick is finding that balance.
Between flexibility and clarity.
Between being able to adjust and having enough detail to make a real contract.
So how much do you actually need to, like, iron out up front?
Right. What's the bare minimum?
And what can you kind of, I don't know, imply from industry practice or agree to later in good faith?
It's a tough question. Every situation's different.
So this whole contract formation thing, it can be a little tricky to navigate.
It's definitely an art as much as a science.
At the end of the day, Bethlehem Steel v. Litton, what does it tell us?
I think it reminds us that even though the UCC tries to be more flexible than traditional contract law,
it's not a free-for-all.
No. Just because you intend to agree on something in the future,
it doesn't mean you have a contract right now.
Exactly. If you want that contract to hold up in court, you've got to be clear, you've got to be specific, and everyone's got to be on the same page.
About those key parts of the deal.
Absolutely.
So much great insight on this one. I really appreciate you walking us through Bethlehem Steel v. Litton. I think it shows just how the UCC works, trying to help business move forward, but also needing those boundaries.
It was my pleasure. It's a classic case, and it still matters today.
It really does make you think, doesn't it? Like, in today's world, business moves so fast. Everything's changing. Deals are getting more and more complex. So how are businesses finding that balance between staying agile and making sure their contracts are solid, you know, learning from cases like this one? It's something for all of us to think about, especially for those of you out there studying law.
Definitely worth pondering.
All right. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.